listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, October 22nd. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Oh, good evening, Michael. I'm so glad to be here as always, and I'm glad to see people in the chat and to let everybody know we have a special guest tonight.
We do. We have somebody that's going to be joining in on our conversation tonight about the definitive explanation on how the universe began. And very much looking forward to that. And we're going to do a big reveal after the nine principles, so you stay tuned. People that are on Teams with us can't hear because I believe it, in fact, filters it out. But live listeners will be able to hear the dogfighting ring that is going on behind me. But we're not there, just playing. It sounds vicious, but they're just playing. But anyway, welcome to those that are joining us live. We always appreciate seeing you. Always so good to catch up. And we always want to thank those that take the time to catch up with us from the archives as well. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. So as always, we're going to begin tonight with our nine abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the origins of the universe and our theories on it, and we're excited to welcome our special guest, Dr. Mike Tickner.
Hey, Dr. Mike.
How are you?
Very well.
From here in Texas and being a true Aggie, I'll have to say howdy.
Well, so glad to have you. I know you'd shared some ideas, so we wanted to invite you, if you felt like it, if you had nothing better to do, to come on and join us and have a chat. But we'll have a nice little round table and kind of go through over some of our favorite theories and what we're thinking about when it comes to the origins of the universe.
And well, you guys, you've just completely crushed me that it's not happened in 7 days, Michael.
No, that's not one of them, no.
Oh, wait a minute. 6 days and a day of rest.
Yes, exactly.
But the question is, how long was a day?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question.
You know, back in the day, in the Christian fundamentalist upbringing I had, it was assumed that a day was 1,000 years. But that being said, you just can't take a book of metaphor and ancient myth and ancient ideas and map it on to modern concepts of science and understanding. You know, anybody with the thing about those books, many of them exist and a lot of them have fallen away, like Zoroastrianism, I think, is just a fringe thing at this point. But the idea being, you're taking some ideas from people that had no way to know. That being said, many may know the Big Bang Theory was first posited by a Catholic priest who was a scientist working for the Vatican. I didn't think to look up his name, but I remember that from history and science. So let me see. Here we are. Nope, that is a sitcom. That's what happens when you Google the Big Bang Theory. But anyway, it is an interesting idea, and it is interesting that a man of religion did first posit the theory. Fringe assumptions. He's Italian, if I'm not mistaken. And they're really getting for time. Anyway, feel free to jump in, anybody who wants to.
I know Dr. Mike had sent you an email, because Dr. Mike, you were all into researching, and you came up with six, potentially seven, theories that you came across. Do you want to share them for our audience here?
I can go through. I'm not sure how you'd actually share the document.
No, but tell us a bit about what you found out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. The Big Bang is still the big theory, okay? It's the primary one and so forth. But there's one other one that's called the Big Bang 2.0.
Oh.
Which is basically, instead of an explosion, the universe emerged as a quantum fluctuation. And that what that means is, like, if you have bubbles and the bubbles contact each other, it creates another universe.
Kind of like the multiverse theory.
Yeah, that's kind of like the multiverse theory, yeah. And all these are, have to realize these are just theories. I mean, there's no proof to any of them, but it's starting to pick up a little bit of that. The second one is called a cyclic or big bounce. And that basically means that the universe expands, cools, dies, compresses back, and bounces into a new big bang. It's kind of like black holes from previous universes and so forth like that. I'm not sure how well, that one is accepted, but I mean, I think people have heard that the idea of the universe expands and then it contracts.
Yeah.
That's the big balance.
Yeah. And I think I heard you say the big balance. I heard it referred to, and you might have said this, I was just looking at a couple of things. The big crunch is another thing I've heard, kind of the idea.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And if we're talking ideas, I am fond of the idea of a cyclical universe where you have a big bang, massive expansion, and it expands until it reaches a certain point, and then it starts collapsing back in on itself.
That would kind of indicate that we live things over and over again.
Well, it could be, but then again, it doesn't necessarily. Well, I guess if you have an infinite universe.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean it creates the same universe. It's just a new one. Yeah.
Different expression of the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. But, what if the laws of physics differ? You know, here's another interesting idea. Hold on one second.
Michael's dogs are barking.
They are. They are. I got two that are just wrestling, and I can't get them to stop. By the way, thank you, Jackie. I had seen that as well. The first person who kind of brought together the theory of the Big Bang Theory is a Belgian scientist and priest named Georges Renater. I'm going to copy this. She posted it in the chat here. I'm going to see if I can get the
whole
thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, again, nothing in life is simple, nothing is black and white, and there have been many scientists and people who have kind of brought us a lot of interesting ideas that believe things that we might not agree with, when it comes to, divinity and things like that. I can't buy that, but, he's got an interesting idea with the Big Bang Theory, and a lot of evidence goes towards it, so...
Here's another interesting fact that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. You've heard that people only use 10% of their brain.
Yes.
That's a misnomer. the original, the original quote, he was a scientist back in the 1800s. He made the observation that we only use the 10%. No, that's right. He actually, he said that, we only understand 10% of the brain.
That's a difference.
That got transposed into we only use 10% of your brain. Which is a big misnomer because everybody uses 100% of the brain every day.
Right.
It's just we don't know what areas do what.
Well, I think that's a big part of why this original incorrect kind of idea or had got misunderstood, as things often do. It kind of picked up on steam because when they originally were mapping things, they could see certain sections light up, so it wasn't all at once. But now they didn't. Now they understand it better. We have so many things that are going on in the background, you know, that are. It takes a lot of computing power to keep us running, and we are constantly working on problems in the background, which is why when you're doing some mundane task, a lot of times you can have like a eureka moment because your brain is constantly working on it. And then my other favorite misnomer is, you know, there is no such thing as an alpha in dogs and wolves. Another good one is, we do not consume spiders, like 10 spiders a year while we sleep. There's some other good ones. This all has everything to do with the creation of the universe, by the way. Don't worry.
No, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, and I think that, well, it's just like there's flat earthers.
Yeah.
And they truly believe the earth is flat. I'm not sure why. But then on the other hand, you got on the religious side, that the Earth is only 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm. I know. So what other theory did you come across besides?
Oh, sorry.
I love our conversations. Don't get me wrong. I just for our audience too, I want to make sure we get through the six.
Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. The third one is the holographic universe.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's basically by string theory and quantum gravity and so forth like that. But it's everything we experience in 3D might be a projection from a 2D surface at the edge of at the cosmos or a black hole.
Oh.
I've heard that too, that we exist inside of a black hole. That's hence our Big Bang. Was a black hole forming and then sucking in a ton of energy as it comes around it?
Yeah.
That's very Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so in love with the Matrix series. The first one, I was like, I had to watch it three times. What?
I never watched the other ones. I watched the first one.
Yeah. No, it's even the second one. No, of course, I'm a Keanu Reeves fan, but that's a real mind twister to think that we're all in this kind of a matrix or a projection of some kind. You want the red pill or the blue pill? What reality do you want to live in? Kind of crazy. But
the fourth one is, we've kind of talked about this before, but it's basically consciousness-based creation.
Huh.
And it basically, it kind of suggests that the universe doesn't fully exist, exist until you observe it. It's just like, are you familiar with the split hole?
Yes.
Experiment?
M2.
Yeah, and so what it is that basically it's, as soon as you observe it, it changes.
Yes.
So the consciousness-based creation is basically exists until you observe it. Consciousness collapse, the wave, and which potentially basically is manifested reality type thing. But it's very close to metaphysical traditions. Let's say awareness is the ground of being, basically. That's what mm-hmm. that one is. Now, I don't know how well that accepted or who actually came up with it, but it's it was one of the four I came up with.
Well, I wouldn't give myself high blood pressure if that were the case.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
The fifth one is, we've talked about this in past sessions, is simulation mm-hmm. origin theory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is, you know, basically it's been created in a physical sense. It's a computer simulation, rendering, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, you can look at it and say, Big Bang was kind of the boot up sequence, and, you know, you can kind of go through the whole thing. But anyway, we've talked about that one, and I'm not sure, you know, where that really stands.
Well, I mean,
it to me, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it was actually proposed by a guy named Neil Bostrom, and Nick Bostrom, I think that was it. But it was expanded by none other than Elon Musk.
All right.
I thought that was kind of an interesting one. And that's the one that kind of goes along with the Matrix.
Mm-hmm. It does. And again, you know, this is kind of what we talked about when we had my father on. You know, it doesn't really answer anything. It just kicks the can down the road, because then what created the same thing with the God theory. God doesn't answer anything, because how did God come to existence? We still don't understand reality because.
Well, I think the big problem with that is that when people think of God, they think of somebody out there that right. is our image. I think of it as energy.
Yeah, right.
And it's kind of like, it's not some dude that has long flowing gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but hey, I could be wrong.
What's the sixth one on your list?
The sixth one is information universe.
Oh,
and
I don't know
the universe,
that one.
Yeah, it has been created, information organized into a self referential loop. It's basically, it just keeps on going. It's kind of like, it's in the beginning was the word, you know, type. It's code, information. And it's kind of like, what is consciousness? Well, or the acoustic record, for example. And that's kind of what the way I look at it or understand it is that, you know, it, the acoustic record has everything in the past, current, and in the future.
Right.
So it's fundamentally information.
Which,
well, how's that stored? What is, you know,
right.
it's, but the information universe was the sixth one that I actually came across. There's actually one, there's another one. And it was kind of combination. Last week we talked about, let me see what it says here.
Well,
he's reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking here at this. I was just going through some of my notes. But anyway, last week we talked about the Pauli-Jung conjecture.
Mm.
Well, if you combine, you know, some of the sciences that we've kind of gone through with that, which is the metaphysical standpoint. I mean, why couldn't that emerge into a unified origin model?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a thought.
And
you know, go ahead, Michael.
I was going to say, when it comes to these theories, we just don't have enough knowledge about the workings of existence to really understand. Like, for example, we can speculate, we can talk about a multiverse, and I think, you know, a big crunch, the cyclical universe, but I also think a multiverse makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting and it's important to have these, you know, these thought experiments, because they drive the conversation forward. They drive our understanding forward, and over, you know, however many millennia, you know, we'll get there. But right now, I just, you know, it's all pure speculation, because
absolutely
we just can't see. We can't see enough. We don't know enough. We have a small, just very thin, you know, fragment of information.
But aren't all these theories also considering, like, we're the only life form?
I don't think any of them are.
Like, because I've often toyed with the idea that every life form on Earth is a reflection of something else in the universe.
Hmm.
You know, of something on some other planet or galaxy, however you want to say it, interdimension, you know, that we're kind of a mirror of that. And Earth is this amalgamation of all those life forms living together. I it's just a thought.
Well, but, I mean, there's one thought that we actually originated on Mars and migrated to Earth.
Hmm.
I kind of go with that.
And one of the reasons is, and that you'll probably think this is kind of weird, but think about this: Mars doesn't have a bright sun. It's
right.
Probably, I don't know what percentage of, you know, it's going to be less light and so forth like that. But here on Earth, why do we have to wear sunglasses?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not used to the bright light.
Mm. It's an interesting
idea.
Is
that a carryover from,
Didn't they recently discover water on Mars?
Oh, there's water there.
It's just frozen.
They've also, according to NASA, they found a very high indication of ancient bacteria.
Right.
Wow.
You know, they're not coming out and saying we found life.
Right.
So they're saying, well, there's a high possibility.
Right.
But,
I think it's fascinating. I think that it's very possible there was some kind of life on Mars. I mean, Earth has been here for 4.5 billion years. I can't tell you how long Mars has been there, but it's a long time. Long time for a lot of things to happen. Mm-hmm. I think largely what we consider life and what we know of has happened in the last billion years, so one quarter of Earth's history. But, when I think about things like I've heard the argument before, and I've had this discussion with my father about the fact that humans, we can't look at the sun and sunlight is bright to us, etc. I would also, point out a lot of species that we know originated here, or we believe anyway, that don't live outside or are nocturnal or live in caves, mm-hmm. or things like that, can't. I don't know if there are any daytime animals that could actually look at the sun or anything without.
Not too many.
Yeah, but I do think it's interesting. I think it's important to understand that life exists outside of this planet, just as there has to be life in the universe. There has to be, just with the sheer number of...
Well, you got the number, and you got the extreme distance,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. Here's an interesting fact. We're talking about light. Do you know, out of the cat family, the only one that has slits in its eye is the domestic cat.
Hmm.
Yes. I read that just recently.
And here's another one that people always say, that our origins, we basically derive from apes and things like that. Well, can you explain to me why primates have 48 chromosomes and we have 46?
You know, there was a genetic bottleneck in our history.
Well, you know, so
that's Darwin's theory.
What's that?
What's that?
The evolution from apes.
Well, I mean, I mean, we are primates. That's just a, you know, fact of biology.
We're not a, but you know, it's kind of a split off type thing and so forth. But yeah, it's like, it's not likely.
What's that?
No, I agree.
That we came from apes.
Well, again, we are primates. We share so much DNA with them.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just the fact of it. I'll be the opposition to these two because I'll say I absolutely think that it's all but settled. That being said, I think, you know, you talked about the 46 versus 48 chromosomes. I hadn't heard that, but I do know that when genealogists look at, that's probably not the right term, but when scientists are looking at the genome and the genetic diversity in humanity, they see a genetic bottleneck. So there was a time where our species was almost extinct. We had less than 1,000 of us on the planet, they estimate, and I think that has caused some differences. But they also say that might be how we became so intelligent, is because Earth was going through rapid climate changes, and only the smartest and fittest could survive in that period of time. But, you know, when if we're talking about origins of the universe, we know we can get to the origins of life and things like that, too, a little bit, and that makes me think about, okay, we can either talk about evolution, or we can talk about any kind of, you know, well, if it's not evolution, then what? I mean, so we came from another planet. Well, how did life get there? What developed it? Then are we getting back to a creator? Did a creator develop something? You know, how did things come to be? But here's one question I think is kind of at the core of things. Why does life want to live? Why does every virus, bacteria, cell, and multicelled organism have a burning desire to live? Where did that drive come from? Why? Why is there that instead of, you know, why is there something instead of nothing?
I have a simple answer.
What's that?
What?
Because.
Yeah.
Just because.
Just because.
Well, I've often wondered the same thing. And I always like to refer to the spirit in us, or that connection to a soul energy, a universal energy that wants to thrive, that wants to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that goes through all living things.
But yeah. But why?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's, I think you nailed it there, Michael. Like, could that not go back to why creation? Like, why?
Well, we just, you know, I do believe that as long as we don't destroy ourselves, humanity will get to a point where we understand existence on a more fundamental level, that we can actually begin to crack some of this code. And I think when that happens, we're going to be manipulating time space. I think we're going to be doing all kinds of things. But how many thousands of years in the future is that? I don't know. But
well, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, where did we come from, like you were saying. You know, I'm partial to the Anunnaki.
I am too. And, well, and because know, people, I have RHO negative blood, so there you go.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, mythology is you know, fine. But I firm believer that within mythology, there's truth. I mean, somebody just did make that stuff up.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, they've had UFO sightings all the way through history. It's in art, it's in all that stuff, and it's just a matter of they're trying to describe something that they didn't know what they're describing.
Right.
Didn't Joseph Campbell talk a lot about that and the power of myth, you know, and what binds us as societies or a culture, and these myths that we consider, but in our mythology, you know, like I'm Scandinavian, so, you know, I really resonate with that the gods are, you know, Odin, and my list is long, and that those are in fact those of the other worlds, meaning not of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, you know, Native Americans have been saying things for, you know,
yes,
a long, long, long time. And they didn't make it up.
So what if, you know, Earth was created as, you know, some say the prison planet or the playground or the, you know, kind of an experiment by, and maybe we were a mining community for blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, there's those.
So then.
Those,
go ahead. I was only going to say, so, okay, then the entities, the creatures, the species that planted us here, that did this, that created this zoo, this prison planet, this mining colony. Well, how did they come to be? Did they evolve? Were they once a primitive species that evolved into something higher? You know, again, is it just that I do think that existence has always existed and always will exist. I think the time is a relative thing, obviously. I don't think there is a beginning or an end. But, you know, that being said, just because existence exists doesn't mean our universe always has. I mean, our universe, I think, has to be in a framework of a larger existence unto itself. But, yeah, so, I mean, a lot of these things that we try to tackle, I feel like it's just it's interesting and it's fun to play around with them, but it just kicks the can down the road because it doesn't mean anything. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's no truth to be found. It's just, you know, okay, if we were created, and it can be easily done. You could have had a much more advanced species that came here, and they could have just done selective breeding like we've done with dogs, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Who the heck knows? But, again, well, how did they come to be? And, you know, I think I wanted to touch on this earlier. I don't know if we did, but the Andromeda Paradox, the notion that, you know, you talked about the Akashic Record. Well, that could just be the nature of the existence in this reality, in this multiversal world and reality, because the Andromeda Paradox, I encourage anybody to Google it because, you know, I can't explain it to its credit, but essentially the idea is, because of the massive distances involved between galaxies and things like that, and the relativity of time and the changing speeds at which, you know, we're all traveling very fast. That means that, depending on which direction you're going on this Earth, relative to the same point on the planet in the Andromeda Galaxy next to us, you're going to have vastly different, you know, shared time. Like, you're now and they're now. If you were to look at an alien, you know, it's going to be different moments depending on where you're traveling on this Earth because it's such massive distances and such massive speeds. And the idea being is that, you know, you can view time-space as like this cone or cylinder that goes out. And everything that has happened and ever will happen is mapped out on it. You know, to come back to Star Trek references, in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, they have these entities that live in a wormhole, they call it, but it's a alternate, you know, an alternate time-space reality kind of thing. And they have no linear time. They don't exist in linear time. I always found that fascinating. And I think that, Vicky, like what you're saying, if we are a spiritual entity, a spiritual creature that kind of plugs in. I think that we exist in a plane that has no linear time, and then we plug into this. Imagine, if you have no linear time, if you don't understand it, and I've said this before, maybe years ago, but what a wonderful vacation it would be just to experience linear time in whatever manner that is. I mean, but again,
well,
it's just fun.
You know, if you're going to travel, you know, when you see a light from, let's say, there's another planet out there that's 100 light years away, and you look at it and you say, gee, that looks like there could be life on that. Well, what you don't realize is that you're seeing light that was generated, you know, a long, long time ago.
Exactly.
In other words, I mean, that speed of light, 100 light years, that's, you know, that's a long, long distance. But you're not seeing what that entity is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, I mean, when you look into a mirror, you're seeing yourself as what it was a fraction of a second or, you know, ago.
And a reverse image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know.
And on top of that, if you want to get even more freaky with it. We don't really even see reality as it is. We see reality as our brain processes it. Yeah. You know, our brain fills in a lot of gaps. Or, you know, how do we know that the colors that we see are even the same colors? Because they're signals that are received by our eyes that are sent to our brain, and our brain interprets them. Is my green the same as your green? You know, that's an age-old question. I think it's just fascinating, the idea of perspective, you know, and the fact that we're all kind of these, you know, we're entities that exist inside of a meat machine that is plugged in via this, you know, this brain, this computing center that, you know, information comes into it and it gets kind of, gets translated so that we can kind of perceive the universe around us.
You know, okay. This might sound like a really silly thing, but a friend of mine was over for coffee the other day. I have these taupe colored curtains. When they're pulled and the sunshine comes through, she said, yeah, the curtains, they look pink, which I don't like pink for one thing. I said, yeah, you know, but they're not, they're taupe. When they're pulled back and the actual color. So it's how light reflects and how we perceive. So it's kind of like in line with what you're saying, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is kind of an altered view. And you add another element to it, and it changes the whole thing. Of course, now I'm getting rid of the curtains.
There are certain colors that you see that don't exist.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard
what
that.
They are, they're, because colors have a frequency, right?
Well, now, if you don't mind sharing, Dr. Mike, you just recently had your eyes corrected.
Yeah. And, I can actually see now.
But you were saying about colors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, because you can tell the big difference when they do one eye and the other eye is not affected. One eye, you look and the sky is blue, colors are more intense, everything is just really amazing. And then you close that eye and look through the other eye, everything has a greenish hue to it.
Mm.
So that, but yeah, there are colors that you see that don't exist because there's no frequency for it.
Wild.
So what it is, it's a combination of frequencies that your brain is perceiving.
Well, that lends me back to what Michael said about maybe we're pure consciousness. Because, you know, I think of a spirit in a body as a fragment of a soul that's connected to a universe and a universal kind of brain, mm-hmm. or universal energy. So we're fragments. We're just little fragments of an expression of something much, much greater. And maybe
and we won't know what that is
until we leave.
That's right.
And then even then, will we know it when we're a part of it?
It's a 50-50 crapshoot then.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is when I was 5, I was drowned. And I left my body, had the total near-death experience. It was the most peaceful, beautiful, almost euphoric experience of, I don't know how to explain, absoluteness, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, this is life. It was mm-hmm. pure. There was no distortions. It was, it was just extraordinary. Of course, coming back hurt. But that's another reason I'm not afraid of death at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back to the source, whatever that source is. So when we come back to this question of what is creation, maybe in some way it's a figment of our imagination, connected to an energy in a physicality with its limitations. I know we all like to talk about life is limitless and do anything you want, blah, blah, blah.
We all know that's not true.
It's the new age way of thinking, right? So,
yeah, well.
You know, manifest whatever you want, the secret, which is kind of bonkers in itself. But, you know, to think, and this is kind of my view. Now, I don't have an answer for this. but this has always been my question, especially having had a near-death experience in this incarnation, that we create an attachment to this reality, and that whether that's through our conditioning, perceptions, experiences, our growth, and so on, and we create an attachment. But what if we have an experience that kind of detaches us from that? Like, is this really real? You know?
Well, I mean, you know, like, how many times, I mean, there are some dreams that are extremely real.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, well, are you, at that point, are you actually in reality, or do you come out of that into something
a
else?
A dream state. I have,
you know,
had,
it's all kind of strange.
Well, that's what I mean by what is creation? Mm-hmm. We can go into what I call these kind of a mentalist kind of view of where we came from. And we've, you know, kind of covered them, thanks to Dr. Mike here. But if we take it to a metaphysical point of view, and we talk about consciousness and understanding that we are pure energy, is it not just the perception of physicality?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not so sure I buy into the whole matrix thing.
We're not pure energy. Our thought process is energy.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Your body is not.
I think it is.
Well,
I think
yes,
it's a condensed form of energy.
And when it's over, it stops. But your consciousness is a different kind of form of energy, I guess. To me, it's like I don't care where I go after that. As long as I have my dogs, I'm fine.
Yep.
You know, it was very interesting to me years ago when I worked at a funeral home for a while. That this attachment we have to cremated ashes, and I'm really sensitive to energy, and there is nothing in a cremated ashes, zero energy. It flatlines, it's nothing. It's no different than if you have a little bonfire, you know, the wood goes to ashes. There's nothing there. You know, it's our attachment to that, and I understand it completely. It's emotional, it's sensitive, but there's no energy left. It's like a really base form of kind of like dirt.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, no, it's your energy, your body energy is transformed into,
exactly.
I mean, you know, heat and ash.
Yes.
But I mean, it's no different than they plop you in the ground, throw dirt on you.
Yeah.
You're gonna, you know, I mean, same thing. I know that the whole thought process of cremation in some religion is, you know, taboo.
Yeah.
Well, my first thought was, well, if that's the case, what happens to a person if they actually get burned up in a fire?
Yeah. You know, my only regret is that I'm not going to have a Viking ship to go off in the water.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you actually could. You actually could. You could probably find somebody that would
trauma. And then I want everybody to play with the Ouija boards.
Yeah, well.
I guess the creation, you know, I think of this when you're in utero, and you come into this reality, is that not a death for the fetus? It ceases to exist in its own universe, in the womb, coming into this reality, breathing air for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So is it not the same when we leave a body and go home, kind of thing? So it's like that cycle in this dimension of
You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's all pure speculation.
But could it not be the same thing for the planet itself?
Sure.
You know, it's, you know, boring.
It's just like the idea of the expanding universe, and it contracts and it expands.
And that's the one I kind of go with.
And that may very well be.
That makes more sense to me.
You know, the you know, it kind of brings up, well, what happens as it's contracting? And, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, black holes are this big mysterious thing. They can tell you all about it mathematically, all around it, but inside the black hole, they can't tell you anything. Because it's a different world.
But I mean, can't tell us anything, but the black hole knows it's something.
Well, does a rock know it's a rock?
Exactly. So we're just limited in how we see things.
Right. You know, I wanted to point out, Dr. Kevin had mentioned it depends on when the soul enters the body in reference to your comment there. I just want to this came to my mind. This is a thought that I had a while back, and it was that essentially a soul is grown by awareness. So when you're aware of the universe around you to any extent, it grows some type of soul, if you will. And I think that the level of sophistication of that soul is dependent on the creature that it goes to, just like, you know, a tree, a bug, an animal, all the way up to a more complex animal like us. That's exactly why I think that artificial intelligence could have something of a soul. If it can be aware and if it can contemplate itself.
I see your point.
I don't think that a soul needs a beating. We're just a machine. We're no different.
I don't know.
It's just,
Michael, having carried three kids, I'm going to tell you my theory on this. At the point of conception, there is a connection. That is a mass of cells that is growing until about 3 days prior to birth. And I have felt, and I've talked to many women, you can feel like a soul enters the body, getting ready to enter this reality.
And at what point have you felt that?
About 3 days before they were born.
So pretty far in. So
Again,
so at what point does the awareness break through into some kind of, you know, more of a consciousness in the soul? And again, we know that at certain points it develops. And again, I don't think that goes against what I was saying about the idea of a soul developing from awareness either.
Well, I mean, a spider is aware of its surroundings.
And again, I think we can. Soul has had a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people throughout time. I am using it in the sense of a life force, of some kind of spark that animates a thing, you know? But,
basically, I mean, if there's, an energy consciousness type thing, it's going to be, you know, kind of like the Akashic record. It's everywhere. And every living thing has one.
I think the Earth itself has its own consciousness.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's got its own heartbeat.
I've seen, you know, Captain Planet. I know about Gaia. You know, don't count me out.
So is the moon hollow?
Well, I mean, personally, I think it's full of cheese. But you know, haters want to hate.
But actually, the moon is hollow to a certain degree. But it's kind of, you know, it's a very interesting thought process. And that's it is.
I think this is a great discussion to open our minds to the possibilities and know how wrong we can be and yet how evolved we are to even be asking the questions.
Wonderfully said.
Yeah. Mushrooms help.
I've never done mushrooms.
As if
myself.
You would know, Dr. Mike. Come on, a straight arrow like you.
No. I was brought up in the 60s. Yeah, if you remember the 60s, you didn't experience it.
Well, I remember the 60s, but I never did mushrooms. I have to confess, everybody, though, I was altered at 14 when I did LSD for the first time.
You did LSD? So, that's a heck of a thing.
A lot of, you know,
that's like,
it's like saying, oh, I never smoked cigarettes, but, you know, I did black tar heroin that one time, but, you know, other than that.
Well, but, you know, it's kind of like, did you inhale?
I guess I'm never going to the U.S. after this show.
I think the statute of limitations is over on that, isn't it?
I think it is. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting topic. And it's up for everybody to kind of think through it. And, you know, it boils down to what you feel comfortable with.
I'm so glad that you joined us tonight, Dr. Mike, to give us a whole new dimension. And besides just Michael and I talking.
Well, you know, but I'm happy to have you. And I didn't want to, you know, pin the whole thing on you and the email and all that content. But
I thought,
you know, if you want to join us for a little round table, it could be fun. And, you know, people get sick of hearing from me, so.
Well, I have a tendency to talk too much, but that's all right.
No, not at all. You know, I know it's coming up around that time. Dr. Mike, you always have something otherly to offer us, and we appreciate you. And, you know, your take on things and the fact that you do more research, you're always curious, you're always learning, and we're so happy for you in your eye surgery. And adding a whole new dimension to your life.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I'd like to give a shout out to Dr. Jeff, who is doing his best to learn more about computers with his Blind Outdoorsman on. He just signed on to YouTube, by the way, everybody. We got a chance to video connect today. I know he's not in the chat tonight, but he showed me the deck he built.
Oh, wow.
He showed me his yard that he has redone on his own. He has very limited vision and gave me an update that he's slowly losing more. He's going to be hooking up with a new ophthalmologist and specialist in the new year. But, you know, he's feeling those moments, and he knows he has to get back into his Braille education and keyboards, and AI is helping him out. And I just wanted to bring that up, folks, that for whatever limitations we have, science, technology, and the world we live in offers us a whole new dimension of reality if we're willing to learn.
Absolutely.
And so I just want to give a shout out to Jeff. You know, I've had a real soft spot for him and, of course, his new wife, Shauna, you know, since way back in the beginning, near the beginning of the school, for that matter, and his evolution. And, you know, all the students who, you know, continue to learn and grow and ask questions like, I don't know, how did we get here? and it's an entertaining discussion. And then how do we live here, and how do we do that well, at least as well as we can with what we've got? So,
well, you know, the key is to move out in the middle of a country where you're not surrounded by neighbors.
Yeah, I know. He actually he does have a little. He inherited this acreage in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota, but they do live in a town. Mm-hmm. And with his new wife, but they got a big backyard. He actually is struggling a bit with the kitchen, but he's finding a new kind of routine in there because he does like to cook.
Yeah.
And so we each have our own reality and work within the realities that we have. And sometimes, like you, Dr. Mike, you know, you get a second chance through technology and science to have new eyes, and we would hope that Jeff and others like him may also have, you know, that in the future. Meanwhile,
absolutely.
You know,
AI is doing some pretty amazing things.
It sure is.
It is. It is a double-edged sword, for sure, but it does doing wonderful things. And I'm sorry, Dr. Ricky?
No, I was just going to say, Dr. Mike, you and I come from a time where it was unheard of to have heart transplants, lung transplants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and these things, the miracles of things that we have observed and been a part of over 70 years... And, of course, kudos to me. I'm 70 on Saturday. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
To me.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And we can appreciate that how fast forward, you know,
right.
We have evolved and progressed as a species.
Mm-hmm.
And what is possible historically and what's possible in the future, you know, it's quite mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But to keep asking the questions and, you know, the will of our spirit just keeps wanting to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, it's just the path that we're on. And again, I think, where are we going to be 1,000 years from now? You know, what is our understanding going to be at that point? But, you know, this says,
I'll be at the home planet.
Yeah.
Well, this discussion has been wonderful, but it is that time of the evening. You know, we're coming to a close.
Oh, it is.
I do want to thank you, Dr. Mike, for joining us tonight for this kind of roundtable and doing it on the fly. And Dr. Vicky, of course, always appreciate having you. Couldn't do it without you. Dr. Mike, any last thoughts before we sign off?
The great discoveries like duct tape. And the second one is cordless drills. You know who created those?
Who?
No, I'm serious.
No, I don't.
No.
NASA.
There you go.
That makes sense.
It's like Star Trek. There's been so many things that have come to fruition because of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Brilliant.
Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts?
Don't let them push you around out there, people.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you both for being here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I can't wait to see you back next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.